Hello and welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. The following message is part three of a series called The Wonder of Worship, and it's presented by Ray Noah, lead pastor here at the center. Today's study comes from the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 6, verses 1 through 16. Let's join Ray as he shares with us this week's message titled Passionate Praise.
If you haven't discovered your passion, you're not yet fully alive to the God who created you with a capacity, a large capacity for passion. So, what is passion? Just what is passion? Well, passion is extreme, compelling emotion. It is an energizing force that rises from deep within us. You might say that passion is a visceral compulsion. Someone who has passion is filled with intense feeling. They have a burning desire. They have an irresistible drive for something. You know, when you think about it, really, it is our passion that largely defines who we are. Well, think about it. It is our passion which largely defines who we are, because our passion reveals what is most important to us. And what is most important to us says a lot about who we are. It defines us. For example, on our staff, we have a lot of passionate people. People who are identified within this congregation by their passion. So, for example, there's Pastor Ron, who has a burning passion for what? For music, for praise, and for worship. There's Pastor Caleb. Pastor Caleb has a burning passion, a passion for students. I mean, he's really gifted at ministering to students. There's Pastor Aaron. Aaron has a passion for middle school students. I went down there on Wednesday night. They open up in the gymnasium, and I was amazed at the passion that this guy, Pastor, he's an amazing middle school pastor. He really is. Tana Hines. I don't know if you know Tana real well. She's been a part of our church for a long time, and she's our early childhood director. And she has a passion for kids. John Harstead on our staff has a lot of different kinds of passions, but one of the things... You laugh, but one of the things that he's passionate about is technology. I mean, this guy, anything that is made by Apple, Mac, you know, iPhones, iPads, I mean, he is our technical guru. And I'm kind of wondering what's on his screen. Kind of looks like he's surfing the web there while he's supposed to be working. He's probably on Facebook. So, John, wherever you are, we'll talk about that. There's Linda Noah, who is passionate about Ray Noah. She tells me she is. She's passionate about teaching and training and equipping and developing leaders and helping people to understand who they are in God. And Pastor Bob Ward is a very passionate guy. Pastor Bob is very, very passionate guy. We don't let Bob out of the sound booth very often, but he tells me he has a passion for starting a sewing ministry for men, and we're actually thinking about launching that new ministry because Bob's passionate about that. You know, passion is a good thing. It's how God created us. To those who live their lives dispassionately, they are missing out on one of God's greatest gifts to them. Now, God has created you with a capacity for passion, but not just a passion for things or for people. God has created you first and foremost and foundationally with a passion for Him. That's where passion ought to start. That's where passion ought to grow from. That's what passion ought to pulsate out from, is our passion for Him. I love how Irenaeus, the second century bishop of Lyon, France, said. He said, the glory of God is a human being passionately or fully alive to God. I like that. The glory of God is a human passionately alive to Him. Now, our passion for God ought to be that which distinguishes us as the people of God. Do you agree with that? Our passion for God ought to distinguish and define us as the people of God, individually, our passion, and collectively, as a church, our passion for God ought to distinguish us as His people. And that passion is best exercised in response to the presence of God in our worship. It's not the only way, but our passion is best expressed and best exercised in response to the presence of God in our worship. So again, now I am narrowing the focus on worship from the offering of everyday life to God now to the offering of our praise collectively to God. And passionless worship, not only the fruit of our lives, but specifically in the fruit of our lips, passionless worship is not God-pleasing worship. Passionate worship is. Now, right about now, some of you are getting nervous because you're more reserved in your worship style. That passion doesn't always spill out and spill over. Maybe you came from more of a Presbyterian or a Lutheran or a Baptist background, and you're thinking, oh boy, what's he going to make us do today? You're getting a little bit nervous right now. Some of you who are more of the charismatic, passionate variety of upbringing or church experience, you're going, woohoo, he's finally, we're going to get some passion in this place. Well, just relax. Let me say it again, because I want to make my case for passionate praise. Passionless worship is not God-pleasing worship. Passionate worship is. And nowhere is this truth, is this principle more visible than in the life of King David, who was known as someone who was deeply passionate about the Lord. He was called the man after God's own heart. All you have to do is read about his life or read his psalms, read his praises and his prayers that have been collected in the Psalter and the Psalms, and you'll know that David is passionate about the Lord. There's a story from David's life found in 2 Samuel chapter 6. So I'll invite you to turn there, 2 Samuel chapter 6. We actually studied this a couple of years ago in our summer series on the life of David. And this story provides for us some, I think, amazing and unusual insights into the kind of passionate praise that God desires from us. Jesus said in John 4, the Father is seeking certain kinds of worshipers, spirit and truth worshipers. And we're going to learn about passionate praise, the kind of passionate worship, the kind of passionate worshipers that the Father is seeking out. We're also going to learn what happens when we lose our passion for the Lord, because that's a very real danger as well. So, 2 Samuel chapter 6, we'll begin in verse 1, and we'll read about 16 verses, not the entire story, but just enough to give us an idea of what's going on here. So it says, verse 1, David again brought together out of Israel chosen men, 30,000 in all, a lot of people. And he and all his men set out from Baalah in Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God, the Ark of the Covenant, which is called by the name of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim that are on the Ark. They set the Ark of God on a new cart, and they brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the Ark of God on it. And Ahio was walking in front of it. David and the whole house of Israel were celebrating with all of their might before the Lord, with songs and with harps and lyres and tambourines and sistrums. I'm not sure what a sistrum is, Pastor Ron, but I think we ought to get some sistrums in our worship team to go along with our brethren, sistrums and brethren. And cymbals. You don't know what it is either, by the way, so just give me a break. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out and he took hold of the Ark of God because the oxen stumbled. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down and he died there beside the Ark of God. That kind of put a chill on the worship service. Then David was angry because of the Lord's wrath that had broken out against Uzzah, and to this day that place is called Perez Uzzah. David was afraid of the Lord that day, and he said, "How can the Ark of the Lord ever come to me?" He was not willing to take the Ark of the Lord to be with him in the city of David. Instead, he took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. The Ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months, and the Lord blessed him and his entire household. Now, King David was told the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has because of the Ark of God. So David went down and he brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the Ark of the Lord had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. David, wearing a linen ephod, danced before the Lord with all his might, while he and the entire house of Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouts and the sounds of trumpets. As the Ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, was watching from a window. When she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. The story goes on, and David and Michal get into a big tussle over this, and they really end up living together, but really not living together as in a loving relationship as husband and wife. And the text tells us that after they argued a bit, David cursed his wife, and she lived a barren, fruitless life after that. Now, this is a really unusual story. This isn't one of those that most little Sunday school kids study and memorize. And if you're like me, when you read this story, it raises quite a few questions, doesn't it? Like, why did God kill Uzzah? I mean, was God in a bad mood that day and it just, you know, struck out and killed Uzzah? Why did God kill Uzzah? And what's up with this dancing thing that David did? And is that setting a pattern for us? Are we supposed to be dancers, dancing in church? And why was Michal so critical of her husband's display, his public display of passionate worship? And what can all three of these people, Michal and Uzzah and David, teach us about passionate praise? A lot of questions here. So let's try to unpack this story, and I think we'll see what the Lord has to say to us about the kind of praise that he desires from us. If you were outlining this text, it would neatly fall into a three-act play, with each of these characters representing one of those acts, a three-act play on passionate worship centered around Uzzah and Michal and David. In Act 1, Uzzah dies. In Act 1, Uzzah dies. Verse 6 says, "The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down, and he died there beside the Ark of God." Uzzah died. In Act 2, David danced. Verse 14, it says, David danced before the Lord with all his might. He didn't just do a little dance, a little jig. He didn't just do a charismatic two-step. I mean, he cut loose. He danced with all his might. In fact, if you were to look at verse 20, one of the things that Michal criticizes about David's dance is that he disrobed in the sight of all of Israel. Now, I don't know exactly what extent that means, but he took off some priestly garments. Some kingly garments. And she didn't like it. And then in Act 3, Michal despised. Michal despised. Verse 16, when Michal saw David leaping and dancing, not only was he dancing with all of his might, not only did he take off a few of the kingly robes, garments, but he was leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. Interesting story. So, the question is, we'll start with the first question, why did God kill Uzzah? Why did God kill Uzzah? Well, there are a couple of things that I think we need to consider if we're to really understand the story. And the first one, I think, is one of the most important points that I can make in this message this morning. And that is this: it is always fatal to take charge of God. Just mark it down. It is always fatal to take charge of God. Let me explain what I mean. Uzzah was a priest. He'd been consecrated to care for the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was the most holy symbol in all of Israel. It represented the very presence of God. And Uzzah and his brother had been consecrated to care for this Ark, to oversee the care of the Ark, which they had done, friends, not just for a week or two. They weren't rookies at this. They had been doing this for 30 years. You could say that Uzzah had hung out with the holy for a long time, like some of us. He had been hanging around the holy for a long time. He knew the law of God, and he knew the regulations about moving the ark. God had specifically said, when the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark of my presence is moved, you are to put poles through the rings that are on the side of this ark, and it's to be carried on the shoulders, by these poles, on the shoulders of the priest. and no one else. And so when Uzzah reaches out reflexively because the oxen stumbled and the cart tipped and he reached out to steady the ark, this wasn't the mistake of the moment, friends. This was a lifelong obsession with managing the ark. This was his lifelong obsession with managing and controlling the presence of God. You see, during those 30 years, he began to cut corners in his worship. And he began to get selective in what he obeyed and what he didn't obey. And slowly, imperceptibly, perhaps unconsciously, he learned to control the presence of God. He learned to control the presence of God. And so to him, this ox cart was a more efficient way to worship, a better way to worship. There's a wonderful book written by Eugene Peterson. I mentioned this a couple of years ago that I think every one of us, if you want to study the life of David, ought to read this book. It's called Leap Over a Wall. And one of the chapters is on David and Uzzah and Michael. And this is what Peterson says. He says, a well-designed ox cart is undeniably more efficient for moving the ark about than plodding Levites, but it's also impersonal, the replacement of consecrated persons by an efficient machine. Now, I want you to notice this next line. Uzzah is the patron saint of those who uncritically embrace technology without regard to the nature of God. There's nothing wrong with technology. There's nothing wrong with progress. There's nothing wrong with modernizing aspects of our worship and adding things into our worship that would you know, make it to create a unique and a more wonderful experience of the presence of God. There's nothing wrong with that. But when we elevate those preferences or those modernities or those improvements without regard to the nature of God, we're in trouble. We're doing what Uzzah did. Do you think we ever do that, by the way? Just a question. Do you think we do that? Do we try to manage God into more convenient forms of worship? Do you think we ever try to manage God into cooler expressions of worship? Yeah, I think we do. Do we ever approach worship in terms of what's preferable to us rather than what's pleasing to God? Again, nothing wrong with preferences. God created us with certain preferences, but when we elevate those over what is most pleasing to God, we've committed the sin of Uzzah. Let me say this. This is critical here. Whenever I move from obedience to God and recognition of his holiness to a more controlled, convenient, and cool form of worship, I risk the loss of passionate praise that pleases him. Uzzah should forever... You know, Uzzah, by the way, is not a bright light in the Old Testament. Maybe some of you have never heard of Uzzah before. Maybe that was the first time, you know, you heard his name mentioned. He's not going to be up there at the top of what the Old Testament is all about. But I think that Uzzah should forever... I think that Uzzah should forever be posted around the church, not just this church. All churches should be posted around this church as well as a warning sign. Danger, danger, beware of the God. You know, you see those signs along a fence that says, beware of the dog. I think we ought to have some signs posted that says, beware of the God. See, there's a danger in our day of getting too casual and too convenient in our worship and forgetting that God is still holy. Of forgetting that God is still a holy God. And we need to remember that God will not be controlled. God will not be controlled. And when we fall into a pattern of control, deliberately or not, sooner or later, we too, like Uzzah, will be dead. Maybe not physically, but spiritually, we will die. I think the modern American church is a real breeding ground for this. If we're not careful, what began as a passion for God will erode until nothing is left but deadness to God. You know, Jesus talked about that. He said to the Pharisees, he says, you're like whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones. In other words, you look good on the outside, but on the inside, there's no spiritual life and vitality. To look at you visually, to look at, you know, what you appear to be, you look really, really good, but you're dead. You're dead. Thomas Carlyle rightly stated that wonder is the basis of worship. Wonder is the basis of worship. Don't ever lose your wonder. Fight to hold on to the wonder you have in your heart of a holy, awesome God. Don't ever lose your wonder. You know, the story is told of Mark Twain, who was apparently a very profane guy. I mean, he had a problem with foul language, of profanities, and his wife was a very refined woman, and she was horrified by his language. And she tried several times to break him of this pattern of swearing, cussing. And she was never successful, so she decided that she would try some shock therapy on him. One time, Mark Twain went away on a trip, and he had been gone for some time, and when he came back home, this refined, delicate woman met him at the door, and the first thing she did was let fly a string of profanities. I mean, she just cussed him out, and he heard some stuff that he had never heard before. He heard some words in combination with other words that he had never thought of before. And he just stood there until she was finished, and he said, "My dear, you have all the right words, you just don't got the music. All the right words, you just don't have the music. We've got the words. Let's not lose the music. Let's not lose the spirit. Let's not lose the anointing. Let's not lose the sense of the holiness and the awesomeness of God." You know what's interesting to me is in this story is that all three characters really were imperfect worshipers. I mean, David was hasty when he tried to bring the ark the wrong way, and he was angry with God when it didn't quite work out, and yet he lived. Michael was critical and resentful, and yet she lived too. Even she lived, but she lived a barren life. But Uzzah, he was indifferent, and he died. He was indifferent, and he died. Perhaps the greatest danger that we face as the people of God and as a church is to grow indifferent to the presence and the nature of God. Don't lose your music. Whatever you do, don't lose the wonder of God and the music of praise, authentic praise, passionate praise. That's us. So what about David? Why does David get to dance after his temper tantrum with the Lord? Uzzah, you know, died for his irreverence. Why did David get to live for his irreverent act? Why didn't David die? Well, here's what I think it is. David was never in a position to be taken care of. David was never in a position to take care of God like Uzzah. David, his entire life had to be taken care of by God, or he wouldn't have survived. Remember, he was always on the run from Saul trying to kill him, and even when he became king, there were lots of people in his kingdom that wanted to do away with him. So David was so dependent on God, and he learned to live openly, he learned to live daringly, trustingly, dependently upon God. He wasn't careful with God, he was just treating God as God. He was being real with God. It wasn't indifferent, he was being real with God. Uzzah had reduced God to an object. That's what Uzzah had done. David was reacting to God as a person. Uzzah treated him as an object. David responded to God, reacted to God as a person. His anger was just a part of his responsiveness to God as a person. Uzzah wouldn't have gotten angry. You don't get angry with an object. You don't get angry with something that you're controlling. So David's response to God was just a part of his relationship with God as a being, as a person. David was fully alive to God. And after he had processed the shock of Uzzah's death, he responded in characteristic Davidic fashion. He danced before the Lord. You see, David had access to life in God that exceeded his capacity to control. And sometimes that passion just spilled out of David's life in a spontaneous, unregulated way. And sometimes, as in this case, his love and his gratitude and his wonder of God exceeded containment. It broke containment, and passion spilled out. Sometimes, friends, We need to get shaken out of our preoccupation with self. We need to get loosened from our self preoccupation. And sometimes we need to dance. Physically, literally, sometimes. But for sure, spiritually, we need to learn how to dance with all of our might before the Lord. When was the last time you had access to life in God that exceeded your capacity for a measured response? When was the last time you experienced that? When was the last time love and gratitude and wonder of God shook you from your own self-importance and your passion spilled out and you danced? That's all that David was doing. Passion was just spilling out, and he danced before the Lord. He didn't look too kingly doing it, did he? But David didn't really care because he wasn't doing it for anyone else's benefit. He was doing it for God's. He was doing it for God's. Other people didn't like it, which brings us to Michal. What caused Michal to express contempt for what her husband David had done? Well, maybe you can understand her horror at what David was doing. Maybe you can understand her displeasure. I mean, maybe it would be a little bit like, you know, what if God blessed me and I decided to disrobe and dance right here in front of you? How do you think Linda would feel about that? How do you think you would feel about that if I looked a little unpastorly in my response to God? You can sort of understand why Michal is embarrassed, but she mocked her husband's passionate display of worship. Why did she do that? Well, I think over the years, while Uzzah had grown spiritually dead to God's presence, Michal had grown spiritually deaf to God's voice. You see, she had a lot of hurt and disappointment and anger and loss and shattered dreams. Remember, she was the daughter of King Saul. She was royalty. She was dynasty. She'd been married to David, only to have that marriage broken apart by her father Saul. She was then married off to another man because Saul was angry with David, wanted to punish him, wanted to kill him. And ultimately, the dynasty ended, her future ended because her father was killed and her brother Jonathan was killed alongside her father. And then years later, David comes back to the throne. He becomes the king. And he finds Michal and he forcibly removes her from her current husband that obviously she was in love with and he was in love with her, if you read that story of how that happened. And David brings her back into the palace, but he doesn't live with her as his wife. He lives with her as his possession. So as a result of all of this disappointment, all of this hurt, all of these dashed dreams, she had quit hearing the promptings of God. You know, sometimes that happens with us. Sometimes people that go through a series of hurts or disappointments become hardened toward the things of God, hardened toward the voice of God. Others, you know, become tender and softened. It just depends on the response of the heart from the person. But Michal became hardened toward the things of God, toward the voice of God. And worse than that, or if that weren't bad enough, worse than that, she loathed David for being alive to God. She loathed others who were still connected and hearing and experiencing God. The Scottish preacher Alexander White made this observation about Michal. He said, "Those who dance, or those who are deaf, always despise those who dance." Those who are deaf always despise those who dance. She was more concerned with how she would look in worship and how others looked in worship than she was with whom she was worshiping. She was more aware of what others were doing than who was being worshiped. Deep down, she resented that David was fully alive to God in that moment, and she wasn't. She resented that. Well, Uzzah's fault was in managing God. Michal's fault was in managing people's response to God. And her critical spirit, her narrow view of worship, caused her spiritual life to shrink to a barren, fruitless existence. She was deaf to God. Uzzah died. Michal became deaf to God, barren, while David thrived and passion spilled out in characteristic of his life, and he thrived in his life as a worshiper before God. So, what do we learn? What are we to take away from these three characters that can help us to move into deeper dimensions of the kind of worship that thrives, the kind of worshipers that God seeks after. What can we learn from these three? Well, very quickly and very simply this. I think we need to ask God in this moment. I think we need to ask God, which of these three characters are we more like in our response of worship to God? Openly, honestly, with the help of the Holy Spirit, say, Lord, which one of these have I become or am I becoming? Are you more like Uzzah? Have you hung around the holy so long that there's no more holy fear? No more holy fear of the Lord? Your heart is no longer moved in His presence? Your worship lacks that sense of wonder and the passion maybe that you once felt for the Lord? You have all the right words, you just don't have the music of the heart anymore? Perhaps you too have begun to selectively obey God. You're cutting corners in your worship. Maybe you're not giving to the Lord. Maybe you're not generous with the Lord anymore. And you don't do that because you know you can get away with it. Maybe you withhold forgiveness from other people when you know that our call is to be forgiving and loving. Maybe you get critical of other people. Maybe you gossip about other people, you know, because you just do. You just justify it. Maybe you knowingly feed unhealthy habits in your life, telling you that, you know, you can always deal with it later. Sometimes perhaps you skip out on worship. You do other things. You don't even show up to church. Maybe there are periods, long periods, extended periods of time where you're not even a part of the worshiping community because other things have gotten in the way and you've kind of justified you're okay with that. Worship without obedience is mockery. And worship without passion is empty worship. And it will lead slowly over time to spiritual deadness. Don't be like Uzzah. Or maybe you're more like Michael, so rigid in worship that anything out of the ordinary bugs you, it bothers you. Maybe you become so resentful toward God because of all of the hurts and the disappointments and the dashed dreams in your life, and frankly, you just kind of are bitter toward the Lord. Or maybe you're bitter toward others who seem to be so fully alive to God while you're not. Perhaps you're more conscious of how others worship than you are of God. Maybe you have found yourself feeling critical for people, critical of other people for their unabashed expression of worship. Or, let's flip the coin, maybe you're very expressive in your worship to God and you kind of criticize those who aren't like you. I mean, it works that way as well. It's so easy for us to get caught up in everybody else's response to God than our own. It's so easy for us to worry about everybody else, like the lady I heard about she was so entwined in everybody else's life. You know, she was up in everybody else's business, and when she had a near-death experience, somebody else's life passed in front of her eyes. Forget about everybody else. Forget about other people. Forget about their response of worship to God, and bring your barren heart to God and allow Him to heal you. Bring your hard ground to the Lord and allow Him to plow it so that fruitfulness can come to you again. Or perhaps you're like David. Perhaps you have a heart like David. You're far from perfect, but you're willing to risk a passionate expression of worship in the presence of God. It may not mean that you'll literally dance. I'm not suggesting that. You know, I don't think David danced every time. But maybe it means, for instance, raising your hands in worship. Maybe even just getting them up about here, you know, is a good start for you. Maybe it means vocalizing your praise to the Lord after a song or a time of prayer. Maybe it means shouting out your praise to the Lord in the collection of the body, the gathering of the body of Christ once in a while. Maybe it means falling on your face before the Lord at times. Maybe it means allowing the tears of worship, the wonder of God, the holiness of God, the awe of His presence just to flow down your cheeks from time to time. You know, frankly, I'm not a very expressive person naturally in my worship. And I've kind of been uncomfortable with worship settings where there is a lot of expressiveness. God made me a little bit more conservative in that regard. And I began to pray about, God, what do you want? How do you want me to express my passion for you? And when I left this church and took a church as the lead pastor in California, God really began to deal with my heart. Suddenly I was in charge of everything and had all the responsibility, and I stepped into a role of shepherd of a lot of people and shepherd of a huge school system, and I became the spiritual father of that church, of that ministry. And in many ways, I began to experience the emotions of what it was like to be a father to a lot of people. My own daughters were moving out of the house at the time to go away to college. And the Lord gave me a passionate expression to his presence. You know what it was? I began to weep. I began to cry a lot. I would get up in front of the people after a prayer time, after a song to start to preach, and I would begin to cry. And I couldn't talk, and I would choke up, and it was embarrassing to me. And Linda remembers this. Sunday after Sunday, I would get up, and I would just choke up, and I couldn't move on from that moment in the presence of God. That was God allowing my passion to spill over for him. And I got so embarrassed of it that I prayed, God, stop this. This is embarrassing. And I talked to my spiritual mentor, Dr. Charles Blair, who passed away this last year, and I said, man, I get up and I'm crying in front of people. I want God to take it away. And he said, oh, don't pray for that. Don't pray for that. That is so precious to God. He said, you know, that had happened to him where he got up in front of people and he would just weep all the time. And he said he prayed that God would take it. And God took it where he could not shed a tear for the life of him until he began to pray and beg, God, give it back to me. And I began to pray after a season of dryness, oh, God, give it back to me. That was just me expressing my passion to you. What is the passion that God has put in your heart that needs to be expressed in his presence? Don't let the wonder and the joy and the passion that you have for the Lord that God has created you to express and experience, don't hold it back. Learn to express it in his presence. We're going to close with a song, and I'm going to ask the musicians to come, but I just want to challenge you with this. I want you to know that my prayer for you, rather, not so much a challenge, but a prayer for you, for each of us, is that we will learn to express passionate praise to the Lord. What does that mean for you? I don't know. I really don't know. I just know that God has created us to express passionate praise to him. So why do I pray that? Why is that on my heart today? Because God deserves it. Because God deserves it. And because you will enjoy it. You don't know it yet, maybe, but you will enjoy it. C.S. Lewis said, we delight to praise what we enjoy because the praise not merely expresses but completes the enjoyment. Did you get that? It doesn't merely express, but it completes the enjoyment. If it were possible to give our delight for God perfect expression, our soul would be in supreme blessedness. If it were possible, well, it is possible. And I want God to enjoy what we do, and I want you to enjoy what we do. I want God to be happy, and I want you to be happy. And the only way we can do that is to learn to express our heart and our love and our joy and our passion to the Lord. We were created to worship God with our lives and with our lips and to enjoy him forever. And when we passionately lose ourselves and passionately express ourselves in the wonder of worship, God is fully glorified in us and we are fully, joyfully satisfied in him. So why don't you stand with me and let's sing a song of passionate joy and praise to the Lord, and then we'll pray and go. Let's sing it.
Shout to the Lord.
Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast, featuring part 3 of our series called The Wonder of Worship. If you live in the Portland area and are looking for a place to connect, please join us this coming Sunday. For more information about our service times and about our church, visit us online at www.pcctoday.com.